Okay, I'll let you know. Call to order the House Committee on the Environment and Water. And we are going to open an informational session today to discuss water issues and specifically what we know or do not know about estimated federal funds related to the stimulus package that may come to Oregon to support existing and new water supply programs and initiatives. So I know this is a subject of some interest to members of the committee, certainly an interest of mine. I think there's potentially great opportunity for Oregon here, especially given what we know about the economic multipliers related to water development, water conservation, water efficiency, and our certainly interest is in finding out from state agencies as well as private stakeholders what they have learned and the direction they may be headed. So I have an agenda that includes presentations from the governor's office, from four state agencies, from the Bureau of Reclamation, the federal agency, and then several interest groups, the Oregon Water Resources Congress, League of Cities, Farm Bureau. I just say that to members. I know you don't have as detailed an agenda in front of you as I do, but that's sort of where we're headed over the next 2 hours or less. And for our audience as well, to give them some sense of timing, I will implement stricter time limits if it looks like we need them. But based on what staff tells me, she's heard best heard from you about what little you may know. Perhaps we won't fill the full 2 hours unless we have lots of questions. We'll see. But I'll begin with Nancy Hamilton and Mike Carrier from the governor's office. If you would give us a sense of your planning and what you're finding on this topic.
Good afternoon. My name is Nancy Hamilton. I'm the policy advisor for Governor Kulongoski for Economic Development. Chair Cannon, members of the committee, thank you so much for asking us here today to talk a bit about the federal stimulus package. The part of the package I've really been very involved with is related to what we're describing as the Oregon Way Initiative. The governor recently declared an executive order announcing the Oregon Way model for how we might be able to approach some of the projects that are coming before the state relative to stimulus dollars. And the Oregon Way Initiative requires several criteria that will be implemented for projects that are considered in this initiative. The notion here was that rather than just receive these stimulus dollars, be they formula or the competitive grant dollars, there are $37 billion in competitive grant monies at the federal level that states across the United States will be competing for. And our hope and intention is to receive more than 1%, which would be the equivalent of what we've received for formula dollars. And we believe we have a competitive advantage over many other states for some of those competitive dollars and developed a set of criteria that we feel will help us receive those dollars. So the criteria, in short, are both social equity criteria as well as carbon reduction and energy conservation criteria. So the notion is if you have on your shovel-ready list of projects a building that needs a new roof, instead of just replacing your roof, in some instances, we could perhaps look at retrofitting your entire building. So be it a university building or a federal building located in the state of Oregon, or other things among the built environment that require some sort of a repair. We would do triple pane windows. We might do caulking and complete weatherization and eco roof. We would look at the boiler system and perhaps reduce energy needs on that front. And we extrapolated out what we might be able to accomplish if we had very large sums of money. And these are preliminary numbers, but they'll hopefully illustrate what we can do if we start to get to scale with some of these notions. If, for instance, we had $200 million, we could take 56 buildings with an average square foot footprint of 75,000 square feet per building, and we could generate over $3 million a year in energy savings based on current utility rates every year into perpetuity. And we would generate hundreds of jobs both in the field and professional jobs, as well as indirect jobs. One of the core criteria in the Oregon Way program is sourcing our materials for all of these infrastructure projects from companies manufacturing these materials within the state of Oregon. Because as you well know, and we all receive almost daily now layoff notices for our manufacturing folks out across the state, we need to be getting those folks back to work. So instead of sourcing just the quote-unquote least expensive materials, we would be sourcing those materials within the state of Oregon and getting those manufacturing jobs back. Water systems would follow along the same goals. As a matter of fact, one of the projects that we're already looking at is the Willow Creek Watershed Restoration Project, which would put the Willow Creek watershed back into compliance with DEQ. It would also help with work the farmers are looking to do. A partnership among the public and private sectors out in that part of the state is already underway, and that project will create jobs not just for the short term but for the long term as well. If larger contractors are receiving some of these projects, they would be asked to partner with companies from those rural communities where the work is being done. So if I'm a large company in Oregon, probably from the metro area, if I'm doing a project out in eastern Oregon, I would be partnering with smaller companies out there and teaching them how to do the kind of work I know how to do, so we're building capacity as we move forward. So the notion here isn't just to do work where we create a smaller carbon footprint, we improve our energy conservation model and put folks back to work. We also want to queue up our capacity from the knowledge economy perspective for future work that we think is going to happen nationally. And so the more companies we have queued up to actually create the materials that are used and do the intellectual capacity building here in Oregon, we're going to be able to export that as the rest of the states start to speed up and get up to speed to what Oregon's doing. The four core categories that we're describing in this are water, transportation, buildings, and energy. And beyond that, it's a very fluid process. The criteria are still being developed. The governor will be announcing the members of the Oregon Way Advisory Group on the 18th, and those requests are still underway. We will that group will be comprised primarily of content experts. So it's not regional representation necessarily or organizational representation. It's going to be content expertise, so folks who really know their way around water systems, folks who know their way around LEED building applications, folks who know their way around renewable sources for transportation, the I-5 corridor and other major corridors that we're looking to potentially transform over the course of time. One of the projects that's been highlighted already is the next solar highway project that's underway with ODOT. And as you well know, as we move toward electric vehicle work, we need to develop electric vehicle infrastructure systems. And so there's a very, very broad swath of the kinds of projects that can be considered under the Oregon Way initiative. And I think hopefully that gives you sort of a general sense of where we're going, and I can answer questions as you might have them.
Nancy, that's helpful. Thank you. Could you clarify before we move on to Mike, will the state be presenting a set of criteria to the federal government in hopes of receiving greater than its 1% share of this $37 billion in discretionary competitive grant funds, or will it be presenting on a project-by-project basis competitive projects that would compete against other projects around the country? It's not quite clear to me what the work product of this Oregon Way will be, mm-hmm. and what we're hoping to achieve from it. Can you clarify that?
Chair Cannon, the answer to your question is it's all of those things. Everything is very fluid right now, both in D.C. and here in Oregon. There are a variety of projects that we have identified already, like the Willow Creek Restoration Watershed Restoration Project. There's also a request at the federal level to come to them with ideas. They're saying to us, you show us a model that works, and we'll look at embracing that at the federal level and then presenting that back to states as a model across all the states. So in the early days of these discussions, and we have a group of folks back in D.C. today, and I've been getting emails throughout the day about how meetings are going, it's really something of a blank slate. They aren't some of the dollars are coming through already defined programs through agencies who've, if you have a community development block grant program, you might be getting more dollars in that CDBG program, and the rules of the road for CDBG aren't going to change. Other dollars are much less prescriptive. They're newly defined. They don't have a program structure that they're already operating within. And so in those areas, there's an enormous opportunity for Oregon to help lead the way. And so when Mark Edlin with Girding Edlin Development was recently asked to participate in President Obama's task force on the middle class, he was virtually the only private sector representative in two panels. And Vice President Biden chairs that task force on behalf of the president. And when Mark was speaking about creating job opportunities and carbon footprint reductions and energy conservation models, they were saying, how can we do this everywhere? And the secretaries of the various key cabinets were being asked to meet with him, and he's back there this week meeting with these guys. And so much of this is very fluid. I will tell you that one thing they are looking for, and that other states have really been under the gun about, is not coordinating at the state level. So if we come in with 15 different competing proposals because we're not working well together as a state, that will not bode well for us. And so one of the core goals of the Oregon Way group is to coordinate our response to some key funding opportunities so that we don't have four or five well-meaning, really great opportunities that ultimately compete against each other and the money goes to another state. Unlike the formula dollars, we're not guaranteed a penny of the competitive dollars.
Well, perhaps we'll get more definition on this as we move forward, and maybe not, but thank you for being here and for that overview. Mike, do you want to jump in, and then we'll get questions from both?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Mike Carrier, Governor Kulongoski's Natural Resources Policy Director. And yesterday when Beth called me to ask me to participate in this hearing, I explained to her for a few minutes the frustration we're experiencing on trying to ferret out more details about and just what kind of funding streams and how they're going to be delivered are associated with the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act. At the end of the description, I heard this huge sigh of frustration on Beth's part. I expressed to her that maybe that's the outcome of this hearing, is we're all very frustrated because we have this huge behemoth federal stimulus bill for which there's a lot of vision but not yet a lot of focus. And funds are being delivered through three general mechanisms: through the state block grant, the $37 billion that Nancy talked about as what the general focus of the Oregon Way is, but not the exclusive focus. Then you have the federal agencies themselves with huge appropriations available to them now. I mean, in that sense, this was almost a super omnibus spending bill that was out of order, that these agencies are receiving billions of dollars through their traditional funding authorities and streams and programs. And third, you've got funds available to federal agencies that are typically delivered to states for delivery to local governments and other partners, or for use by those state agencies for supporting programs. The finesse for the Oregon Way, I think, is to figure out not only to capture the opportunities for innovation, for use of renewable technologies and new technologies, and greater efficiency and accountability of these projects from just the block grant money, but how to look for those opportunities across all three of those general funding streams. Now, Mr. Chair, if you haven't heard a summary of what's all in the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act related to energy and natural resources, with your permission, I'd like to take just a couple of minutes and just talk to you at a very high level.
Sure.
What kind of funds we're talking about here that were in the bill. First, on energy, there was $11 billion for transmission infrastructure alone, and $4.5 billion of that is to implement programs authorized under the 2007 Energy Independence and Security Act to implement the smart grid, which modernizes our country's electricity grid. There's money in there for worker training and studies of future demand and transmission requirements, just a whole host of funding opportunities under that $11 billion. There's $3.25 billion available to the Western Area Power Administration and $3.25 billion in borrowing authority to the Bonneville Power Administration. Most of that's going to be used to build new transmission, largely to integrate this wind energy that we're building in eastern Oregon with the Bonneville grid. Under renewable energy, there was $6 billion for loan guarantees that fund a variety of energy projects, including next-generation nuclear, clean coal, and renewables. Local government efficiency, energy efficiency block grants, $3.2 billion available for that category of funding. State energy programs, there were $3.1 billion available for state energy programs that are traditional programs that have been a state-federal partnership. There's energy efficiency, renewable energy research, development, and demonstration and deployment. There's $2 billion available for that category, and $1.6 billion available for Department of Energy science programs, as well as $400 million for advanced research projects. On home weatherization, there was $5 billion of federal money nationwide. Smart appliances, $300 million available to provide consumers with rebates to replace old appliances with energy-efficient Energy Star products. Fuels and vehicle technology, there's $2 billion for advanced battery and grant loans and grants for the new state-of-the-art batteries. Electric transportation, there's $400 million available to encourage the electric vehicle technologies. And $300 million available for the Clean Cities Program, which is to provide for alternative buses and trucks through hybrid and electric vehicle technology. Under fossil energy, there's $3.4 billion for fossil energy research and development, including $1 billion for fossil energy research and development programs and $800 million for clean coal power. Under Department of Energy Environmental Cleanup Programs, there's $483 million. For non-defense sites for cleanup, for $390 million for uranium enrichment, decontamination, and decommission fund, and $5 billion for defense environmental cleanup. Under NOAA, National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, there's $600 million for satellite development and acquisitions. Habitat restoration, now we're getting to the stuff I like. There's about $400 million for ready-to-go habitat and fisheries restoration, marine debris, and mitigation projects. And a lot of these that I'm talking about here, after I do a summary of just what's in it for Oregon or what we think may be in it for Oregon, the agencies are going to follow and talk to you in more detail about what they've learned about many of these same programs. Through the EPA, there's $4 billion available through the Clean Water State Revolving Fund to help communities upgrade their wastewater treatment systems, and I see great opportunities there for communities to employ new technologies and new design to achieve water conservation, water efficiency, energy efficiencies. The only concern I have about that, as well as the next program, which was $2 billion for loans for drinking water infrastructure, is the expectation of Congress and the President is that all of these dollars can be obligated within a year, that there are communities out there waiting with shovel-ready projects. Having built lakes and reservoirs and water storage and electrical systems in my career, I can tell you that typically if you don't have the money for a project, you take it to one level of design that gets you eligible for funding, but there's a lot of design and other work that needs to be done, including the permitting work on these projects that is held off until the funding is secured. And I just want to express this concern for the record that I think the expectation of all of this money, that these projects are all going to be obligated and shovel-ready within 6 to 12 months, may have to be adjusted over time, because the experience shows that not many owners of this kind of infrastructure have taken it to the level of design detail that they're ready to bid or obligate funds. And more importantly, many of these are based upon traditional technologies and traditional design paradigms when we're actually looking for new opportunities for innovation and revolution. So that's a big category, though. That $6 billion from EPA is badly needed and is a real opportunity. There's $100 million for brownfields cleanup. There's $600 million for Superfund hazardous waste cleanup, $200 million for leaking underground storage tanks, and $300 million for reducing diesel emissions. Now, the U.S. Department of Agriculture has $176 million for maintenance work at its agricultural research stations across the country. The USDA also has $24 million for building and facility improvements at its facilities. And there's almost $1.4 billion to support. There's over $5 billion available for rural water and waste disposal systems. There's actually
$5 billion, you said?
Yeah, almost actually over $5 billion available for rural water and waste disposal. And that is one that I hope the agencies can provide more clarity for, because it's not well defined in the summaries that I've read as just to how that money is going to be delivered. Wildland fire management, there's $500 million available for wildland fire management, an issue that badly needs to be addressed. $290 million for watershed and flood prevention, $50 million for watershed rehabilitation, $650 million to the Forest Service for ready-to-go restoration and maintenance projects, including roads, bridges, trails, watersheds, forest thinning, abandoned mine reclamation, and habitat restoration projects. And the U.S. Geological Survey has $140 million available for repair and modernization of their facilities. Bureau of Land Management has $180 million for construction projects, including roads, bridges, trails, deferred maintenance of other kinds of facilities, and hazardous fuel reductions on their forest lands. Fish and Wildlife Service has $115 million available for construction projects, mostly on their national wildlife refuges and their federal fish hatcheries. And there's $165 million in addition available to the Fish and Wildlife Service for resource management, whatever that is, and we're hoping to capture some of that. The National Park Service has $146 million available for renovation and repair, for operations in our national parks, and then $589 million available for construction, mostly renovation and repair projects in the national parks. And Bureau of Reclamation has $1 billion available for capital improvement projects, including funds to provide clean, reliable drinking water to rural areas and for water reuse recycling projects to ensure adequate water supply to western localities impacted by drought. Now, I understand that at the end of this, or toward the end, you have an official from the Bureau of Reclamation on, and I'm pleased to see that, because I think of all the federal agencies, that's the agency that we've heard the most detail from in terms of how they envision those dollars to be delivered. The Corps of Engineers has $2 billion for construction on projects that have already received federal funds that include $375 million for the Mississippi River and its tributaries, and $2 billion for operation and maintenance projects. And we've met with the Corps last week about much of the work they're going to be doing on the Columbia and the Willamette projects, the flood control and hydro projects with those funds. There's $75 million for the Department of Defense for research into renewable energy to power weapons systems and military bases. And then finally, the General Services Administration has $4.5 billion available for green building, converting federal facilities to green building standards, and $300 million available to GSA for fleet replacement with more efficient vehicles. Now, what that all translates to in Oregon, as best as we can determine, is probably summarized in the following paragraph that Jane Beccari and my staff put together in looking over the agency's summaries. The Act provides over $13 billion in environment and natural resource funding, what I just described to you a minute ago. That includes $6 billion for helping communities with water quality, wastewater, drinking, and water infrastructure needs, $300 million for grants and loans to help with projects to reduce diesel emissions, $200 million for the cleanup of petroleum leaks from underground storage tanks, $100 million for competitive grants to evaluate and clean up brownfields, $600 million for hazardous waste cleanup Superfund sites, $126 million for water reclamation and reuse projects, $290 million for watershed and flood prevention operations, $295 million for habitat restoration, plus funds for wildland fire management, and as I mentioned before, a significant amount of money for rural water and wastewater disposal programs. As the agencies come forward and talk to you about what they think this translates to in terms of effort for Oregon, I'm sure you'll have many questions about them, but as I said, I think the finesse here is how to take, whether it's solely a federal project that's occurring in Oregon, or it's a federally funded project moving funds through a state agency to a local community or being used by the state agency, or whether it's a community block grant project being funded through OECD, through that traditional program, or the state competitive block grant program, the finesse is how do we capture the best value of those projects to ensure that we're using the state-of-the-art technology, we're achieving our goals of sustainability and innovative technologies, and most importantly, how do we achieve the accountability that the president expects the governors to produce for all of these projects and these expenditures? With that, Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to answer your questions.
Thanks. First, I'd ask Mr. Currier that you send those figures to the committee, if you could. It'd be really helpful to see that, including the final summary paragraph, because it sounded like that did a nice job of sort of lumping some of the sums that you mentioned previously. And then, if you could, give us a sense. I mean, for an Oregonian who happens to stumble across us in the dead of night on their Oregon channel, and here's this, all these millions and billions, and thinks, well, I know of a good project that could use funding. What would that citizen do? Would they come talk to their legislator? Would they call you up, Mr. Currier? And what does the average American do hearing all this money that's available for good things in their community?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's an excellent question, and I was remiss for not including this information, because the governor's office is really focused on trying to answer questions, because we're getting questions from all over, people wanting to submit their projects, people wanting to know if a project's going to occur in their community, people wanting to know if this is really going to translate into a job for them because they've been laid off. And what we're doing is our office has put together a website on the stimulus bill, on the Recovery Act, that will include the high-level summary. It will include detailed information as we develop about the task force and the role of the task force. And it will include, as much as we know, it's going to be iterative. It'll change every day with new information as we fill in the details. It will include as much information as we have by each funding stream and category, including most likely links to how to apply for these funds or how to access these funds. And in most cases, what we'll be doing is, when I talk about a lot of these funds, especially like the State Revolving Fund for Water and Wastewater, those programs are delivered through a collaborative effort. I think it's OECD, Public Health, and DEQ all work together on that. There, on our site, there will be a link where they can link to the agency's websites where there are more detailed instructions about how to apply for those funds, as an example.
And if I might add, Chair Cannon, there will also be an opportunity to put your name and email address and where you're from if you want to be updated as we go. There'll be opportunities to communicate with constituents all over the state as more information becomes available from our office. So if you're a citizen and you want more information, you can put in your name and email address, and as we start to collect that data, we'll be reaching out to people in email blasts as we go along.
That sounds great. The website address, I'm waiting for your
it's URL. Freemoney.com.
.gov.
.gov, all right.
Mr. Chair, you just go to the governor's website, the governor's office website, and it'll be prominently identified there, and just link to it through that.
It literally just went live. The other thing that I think is important to know is that every state agency will have a link to it as well. So you can access this site from any state agency site or from the governor's site.
Okay, great. Questions from the committee?
Yes.
Representative Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The two very different questions. First, related to Chair Cannon's question, is there any plan in the governor's office to do what I think some states have done, and I'm not advocating one way or t'other, but to having sort of a stimulus czar, but sort of somebody, you know, one-stop shop, or at least somebody who's managing that process? And I heard Mr. Carrier's answer and appreciated that, and I still, you know, getting the word out to folks about how we're actually interfacing with this, how much it's not just a soup, you know, would be valuable. Any plans for a czar, or why is that stupid?
Representative Smith, the answer to the question is the governor will not be appointing a quote-unquote stimulus czar as some other states have done. Brian Shipley, the governor's deputy chief of staff, is the core point on behalf of the state and on behalf of the governor for this. And he is in Washington, D.C. this week. The key point people from states across the country are going to be receiving a briefing from the federal agencies on Thursday. It'll be streamed live. Anybody can participate in listening to what information is shared. We presume that Brian will come back with a great deal more specificity about how some of this will work as a result of that briefing. The Oregon Way Advisory Group will have a chair, but that group will be working specifically with key projects that we believe are very innovative, that have a carbon reduction and energy conservation component. There are, as you know, many millions of dollars coming through to the state through state agencies and otherwise that won't be part of the Oregon Way program.
Second question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the stimulus efforts, both state and national, are exercises in Keynesian economics. The theory being we inject a dollar into the economy and it turns into $1.7 because they buy something else, or maybe it's $2.2. As I've shared with Mr. Carrier, my own impression is that a water project, say storage or efficiency, that would help us turn fallow ground to fertile ground, has a multiplier of way more than 1.7 to 2.2. It seems to me there are very few things I can imagine under God's green or occasionally brown earth that would have a higher multiplier than turning fallow ground to fertile ground. What of the many litany of things, nothing rang my bells as I was listening. What creative thinking can we do to apply our judgment, unless my judgment is hogwash, to the good thinking of the presidential administration that might not have been fully applied to the realities of the West as they applied this money? To make more simple, how can we take some of this money and create some water projects that are good for Country Mouse and City Mouse?
So, Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, I have to commend Representative Jensen. I can see his influence is really pervasive in that line of questioning.
I was already hopeless.
You're going to hear from the Department of Water Resources regarding information they're getting from the Bureau of Reclamation regarding direct opportunities and grant opportunities to work on new water supply projects. Having said, and you'll hear also, I think, from the gentleman from the Bureau of Reclamation about this as well, in which there will be a direct delivery of dollars for some of the things that we've been trying to do here in Oregon. But more importantly, I think, and it gets to the representative's question, you know, we've been blessed with abundant water for most of the time in Oregon, but we're starting to see the strains of over-appropriation of water, the strains of diminishing water quality, the strains of climate change affecting weather patterns and reducing water supply are making it highly unpredictable. And that's where I think that if we look across all of these projects and all these dollars are going to be spent, particularly in the areas of the state revolving funds for water and wastewater, and even the renewable energy technologies, things like producing solar wafers, if we're going to continue to do that here in Oregon, all of which are big water consumers. And in those projects, design in water conservation, water efficiency, water reuse technologies that are state-of-the-art, we free up more water for fish, fowl, and agriculture.
One follow-up, Mr. Chair.
Quickly.
So it does just seem to me, and saying to the record and speaking to the room and also to us, because I think there's a limited window of opportunity here to do something big. And if we miss this opportunity, I don't think we're going to get it soon, to bring together urban and rural folks who've been thinking that government wasn't their friend, and urban folks thinking that rural is somewhere else that I sometimes drive over or fly over. Good for fishies and for farmers. You know, good for the state's fiscal picture. You know, real big opportunity, but only if people as connected and smart as you and my friend Nancy Hamilton push like heck to make something interesting happen. And so I just want to say, because, you know, Representative Jensen and I are going to do whatever meager we can, or significant he can, meager I can, to do something, but without major, shoulder to the wheel from the governor's office, we're just going to be, you know, dancing alone. And so please help.
Representative Bernhardt?
Thank you. One of the items that you talk about was rural water and wastewater management, and you indicated that there were some difficulties in understanding exactly what that proposal was going to be. I'm sure you're very aware of the wastewater projects in the small communities in the Willamette Valley, several of which are in my district, some of which are under construction, but will lead to extremely high wastewater costs for homeowners, some of which are not under construction because we haven't been able to find funding. Is this a potential source of funding, and is this the sort of thing that the Oregon Way is likely to go after?
Mr. Chair, Representative Barnhart, the funds that I was referring to, there are the traditional revolving funds for water and wastewater, the drinking water and wastewater, which is the $6 billion nationally that I talked about. In addition to that, the $5.2 billion that I identified is a USDA appropriation, which I assume is going to come through rural development, which will provide grants to small rural communities. And to the degree that some of that could translate into working even with private water suppliers or private wastewater treatment systems, or working to bring those systems into a combined system for better efficiency, lower cost, and better environmental benefits, I would hope they do. But I have little details about how those funds are going to be delivered. Like I say, I assume they're going to come through the traditional rural development programs that have made those kinds of grants. The thing about this act that impresses me is there are funding authorities that we haven't seen funded in 20 to 25 years through the federal agencies, and a lot of it translating into, well, I think, new rural effort.
Mm-hmm.
So the federal agencies are scrambling to figure out how to revive those authorities, how to restaff them, and start delivering these funds. One of the thing we've met with the Corps of Engineers, the Bureau of Reclamation, and the Forest Service in the last week to talk about, so what are they going to be doing here in Oregon? And what we've learned is that they're pretty much in the same situation we are in terms of not yet knowing the details of the amount of funds that they're going to have at their disposal. In February, as the Act was moving through Congress, all these agencies were asked to compile lists as quickly as possible. They were even mining us for lists of projects, and to get those to D.C. to demonstrate to the Congress just what's needed, and to prove to OMB that there's really a need and there's a capacity out there to get projects on the ground in a few months. And so those agencies just submitted hundreds of millions or billions of dollars worth of effort that they see available out there to undertake. Then the bill was passed, and then the agencies were asked to submit a spending plan. Some had their plans ready, like the Corps of Engineers have had their plans on the shelves and ready to dust off for a long time. I think Forest Service was in pretty good shape. BLM has asked for until May 1st to even submit their spending plan. And they're submitting these all to OMB, and OMB has embargoed the list that the agency submitted for approval, because what they return in approval is going to be obviously much smaller. And probably for good reason, they've said, don't release the list you submitted because you're going to artificially raise expectations. Only release the list that we approve. And we've only gotten so far notice from one agency, the Forest Service. Last Thursday called me and said, heads up, we're going to put out a press release that we've got the first 10% of the money that's going to be authorized under this act for this region for Forest Service, and it's going to be delivered for a youth employment grant in the state of Washington and for some building and road maintenance that we need to do. But that's only the first 10%. And that's the frustration I think that Beth experienced yesterday when I talked to her, and that I've experienced last week, and that I'm sure the federal agencies are feeling as well, is until OMB sends back the specific approvals, we won't know a lot of detail here.
Representative Benz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do you have some feel for how much Oregon could anticipate actually receiving from all of this? The reason I ask is because we are obviously facing a terrific economic challenge. And although this, I wouldn't suggest that we shouldn't try everything we can to get this money, I just wonder if it's masking the bigger problem that we may be facing. So I would like a sense of proportion. How many dollars do you think, if we do our very, very best, will this state end up with?
You want to take a stab at that?
I'll take a stab. If we were to receive 1%, which would be the equivalent of what we've received in terms of formula dollars, we would get $370 million across the programs that have been identified and others that weren't identified in this document. Some of these programs, Oregon is not well suited to receive some dollars. Other programs, we are much better suited to receive more than our fair share of those dollars. I will tell you, in discussions we've had with folks in the Vice President's office and in the President's office and Secretary of Energy's office in particular, two things are happening back there. One is they're inundated with small requests. And if you multiply 4,000 small requests times 50 cities, they're all just turning into wallpaper. And so they're really looking for larger requests. So, for instance, and this isn't a natural resources example, but you can extrapolate it out to this, when we met with the city of Portland, we know they were going to request dollars for weatherization to grow the residential weatherization program that they've done. It's been very successful, and it's an excellent model, and Representative Bailey's very familiar with it as well. And we said, let's take that as one statewide request and do four communities, and Portland can be the urban example, and we can do a coastal example, an Eastern Oregon example, a Southern Oregon example, and let's identify four communities that can all use this, and then we have a big transformational opportunity that the president can then respond to. And so we believe that the opportunity to get more than our fair share from a formula perspective is to come in with large projects. This is not a time for modesty. We don't believe that being smaller is going to increase our opportunity for success. So if there are water restoration projects, the two other issues that have been very clear to us are replicability and scalability. So if we do these four projects in Oregon, can we then take these to states in other parts of the country and replicate this model or scale this model up? And so those are, and social equity issues. Who's at the table getting jobs? And the bottom line here is not just the environmental stewardship obligations we have with these dollars, but we need to, and we are going to be held accountable for the job numbers, both direct and indirect. And so our capacity to look at carbon reduction, energy efficiency, improved water systems operations, replicability, scalability, and everyone coming to the table, we have a great opportunity to receive more than our fair share. That's what we're back there trying to do right now.
So, Mr. Chair, if I may, I want to tag on to that because while it's not yet known, I see great potential, and I see great potential for a variety of reasons. The Bonneville Power Administration has $3.25 billion of new borrowing authority for transmission, a lot of that here in Oregon. Our opportunity to capture a lot of the state block grant money for and the new energy money for further development of renewable energy like wind and solar is up to us to go after that and win that. The Corps of Engineers has a huge array of projects on the Willamette and on the Columbia that need a lot of maintenance, and they're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars of expenditures there. Oregon is ahead of most states. We have the Oregon Plan for Salmon and Watersheds, which puts us in, and we've just completed development of a number of recovery plans for salmonids on our major basins, which positions us to be more competitive than others for capturing the dollars that are available for watershed and habitat restoration. And we've got dollars to match through Measure 66. And then finally, over 50% of Oregon is owned by the federal government. 50% of that is in forest cover, managed by the Bureau of Land Management or the U.S. Forest Service, all of it needing treatment. And again, it's our opportunity to work with those federal agencies to capture those dollars to do that treatment. I would also say that one of the things the governor's asked, and Brian Shipley is working very hard on, is the Department of Administrative Services is taking the lead on behalf of the governor, developing a system of project recordation, project tracking, and performance metrics for those projects, so we can answer those kinds of those questions. How are the dollars flowing? What are they producing in terms of jobs and economic return?
Great. And a quick follow-up, Representative Benson, then we're going to need to move on.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. My question, thank you for that answer. It's excellent. The question I have, though, is this the most important thing that we are about now, chasing those stimulus dollars? Because it sounds as though the energies are a question, the stimulus are a question was good, because it kind of suggests, prioritization-wise, where your office is spending its time. And I guess I need to know, is this the most important thing now to go get this federal money?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bence, it is a top shelf priority for the governor. He is very focused on this because he sees the opportunity for Oregon to capture a greater share of these dollars than other states by getting ahead of the game. And so he is very committed to this. He's detailed Brian Shipley, our Deputy Chief of Staff, to spend full time on this, and we're supporting him with staff, a staff person from my office of four staff. One staff person is going to be spending a good share of her time coordinating the Natural Resource Agency efforts. So it's a top priority, but it's not the only thing we're working on. We still have an awful lot of governance that we're doing in coordinating with the agencies and all the other issues that we manage in the governor's office.
Thank you very much for being here for your overview of this. We're going to hear from agencies next. I appreciate your time. We'll spend about 10 minutes each with folks from DEQ, OEB, Water Resources Department, and OECDD. So let's start with Judy Jondal and Christine Zvekovich. I might have gotten closer this time, Christine, with DEQ. And again, in the interest of time and the need we have to be out of here by 5, we're going to try to keep it to even a 5-minute presentation that will allow for just a little bit of follow-up on each agency.
Chair Cannon, members of the committee, my name is Christine Zvekovich with the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality. With me today is Judy Jondal. We are here today to tell you about the additional funding that Oregon is getting through the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act for the Clean Water State Revolving Fund Loan Program. Before Judy outlines the act and what DEQ is doing related to it, I would like to provide a brief overview of what the Clean Water State Revolving Fund Program actually is. The program issues low-interest loans to communities and public agencies for water quality improvement and wastewater projects. DEQ gets an annual capitalization grant of approximately $10 million from the Environmental Protection Agency for this program. DEQ has been administering this program for almost 20 years. Through the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, Oregon will receive an additional capitalization grant of $45 million. This money must be committed to eligible projects by February 16, 2010.
Great. Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Cannon and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Judy Jondal, and I work in the Water Quality Program at DEQ. I am a section manager for the Community Assistance and Program section, for which the State Revolving Fund is under. Today I will quickly provide an overview to you of our efforts that we have been implementing since last year, basically started looking at this in November, December, when we were anticipating that this was coming down the pike. So I think you will be receiving the handouts, which I'll be referring to throughout my presentation. I'll touch briefly on just an overview of the Act, what's in the Act, how we are working with EPA, other funding agencies, and our potential loan borrowers. As Christine mentioned, we know the amount of money we're receiving. It's stipulated under the Act that $4 billion was dedicated to clean water state revolving fund programs. Oregon's percentage of that fund is based on prior capitalization grants we have received, which is approximately 1%. So of that total amount, we are looking at receiving $44.7 million approximately for the clean water fund program. The Act dictates that 20% of those funds, the money, is to go to a green project reserve fund. So thus, 20% of $44 million is about $8.8 million that we need to dedicate to the Green Project Reserve. This fund is to be used for projects that address green infrastructure, water, or energy efficiency. The Act also requires that not less than 50% of the grant be used for additional subsidization in the form of principal forgiveness, negative interest loans, or grants. I will discuss later in a minute how DEQ is approaching this in terms of how we are looking at the financial implementation of the Act. As was previously mentioned in the previous discussion with the Governor's Office, under the SRF program, all projects are to be under contract or under construction within 12 months of enactment of the Act, which thus leads us to a February 16, 2010 date. Projects must comply with the federal wage rule requirements under the Davis-Bacon Act, and also any project funded under this Act must use iron, steel, and manufactured goods produced in the United States. We have made this very clear to our potential borrowers that they must comply with these requirements. There are also several reporting requirements and certification requirements that we must follow through. One of these is which is a weekly reporting requirement into the National SRF benefits reporting database, which we will be tracking. So we have done a lot of outreach and continue to work daily with EPA, potential loan borrowers, and other funding agencies in the state. Since the capitalization grant under this Act is funneled through the Clean Water State Revolving Fund program, all SRF program requirements must be met. This means that the program that we have in place under our administrative rules apply to what we must do to satisfy federal requirements and what a loan borrower must do to satisfy DEQ requirements. For example, a project must comply with federal environmental review requirements such as the Endangered Species Act. We are in constant communication with EPA's Region 10 office to make sure that we meet the intent of the Act and are timely applying for and receiving our federal capitalization grant. We definitely want the money as soon as we can get it. We have participated in webcasts hosted by EPA that provide the states that are providing states with guidance on implementing the Act. One of the handouts that I have shows our implementation plan and various aspects of implementing the Act that we are pursuing. In anticipation of receiving federal stimulus money, our planning efforts, as I mentioned, began several months ago. In December of last year, we mailed out a solicitation letter to cities, counties, sanitary service districts, irrigation districts and conservation districts to inform them of the possibility that we could be receiving this money. We also hosted a meeting in December for those projects already on our applicants list, and we provided them with information at that time about the possible federal money. Last week, we held a follow-up meeting with those folks to provide applicants, consultants, and other stakeholders the updated information we have at this time. We are working with OECDD and USDA Rural Development to better coordinate outreach efforts to potential applicants. Yesterday, we had an inter-entity meeting in which the agencies got together. The idea was to look at everybody's project lists and see where there are crossover in terms of borrowers coming to the agencies to apply for funding opportunities. We will continue to work together, and there was an emphasis that we all agreed upon that we needed to continue to do outreach to potential applicants. As far as the financial terms under the Act, as I mentioned, that no less than 50% of our money that we receive is to be used for additional subsidization. We met with a work group who focused on financing options with the intent of meeting the Act's goal to fund projects that will preserve and create jobs and promote economic recovery. The work group wanted our approach to be equitable and simple and to fund as many projects as possible. Since our current administrative rules define small community, we look at the applicants and those types of projects in this category as outlined in the handout before you. A small community is a public agency with a population serving a population of 5,000 or less. Based on our analysis, we determined we could assist most small communities on that list if they are ready to proceed with their application and meet all the requirements, and we would limit the amount of the loan to $5 million, and we would offer 75% principal forgiveness. Other communities on that list in the lower half of the chart there are still eligible for funding under the stimulus package, but we would offer them 50% principal forgiveness with a $5 million limit. For all loans, the interest rate would be 0% versus a percentage of the national average municipal bond rate that is currently offered under our program.
Judy, I'm going to ask you to wind it up so we can try to get in a question.
On my last point here.
Super, thanks.
Since our current rules do not allow for principal forgiveness, we are having to go before our Environmental Quality Commission next month for a temporary rulemaking to address this, and we intend to proceed and do not anticipate that the Commission is going to have any problems with that, as we informed them at their last meeting that we would be pursuing this. And that's all I have at this time, and be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Great, thanks. I suspect there might be questions about the handout, including a list of applicants for the revolving fund loan program. Perhaps not, in which case.
Oh, well, Chair, I'm still looking at the list. I see, if I may,
yep.
I see one of the communities that I'm interested on and is that I'm familiar with, let's put it that way, is on the list, but I don't see some of the others. Perhaps I'll take them up offline.
Sure, and Chair Cannon and Representative Barnhart, we do have information posted on our website. All application information is there, and we are updating it with this the Act information. The information that you have before you is on the website.
Go ahead, Representative.
You may have said this, and I may have missed it. Are projects that are currently underway or about ready to start also eligible for application for these new funds?
We are waiting our Attorney General's opinion on that. The
okay.
Act does provide that we can look back to October 1st of 2008, and if a project has not incurred debt since then, we can look at that as being a possibility under the Act, yes.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And if I'm reading this correctly, there's a total of over $300 million in applications or amounts requested. You said the our chunk of the federal will amount to about $45 million for this program. So what criteria will you use to winnow this list, and what other sources of funding do these applicants potentially have in order to do these projects?
Sure. Chair Cannon, if you're looking at the chart on the right-hand side, is probably the most important column, and that's the federal cross-cutter program, or progress, excuse me, that we look at the applications must address the federal environmental requirements, and that's a key because that is a lengthy process for most communities to go through, and we're assisting them with that. If they are nearly complete or completed, depending on their ranking, that does not matter. If they are ready to go and they're at the top of the list, they will get funded. We will be looking, if we have everybody all of a sudden ready at the same time, we would look at their ranking, which is the column there that is based on criteria in our rules that we assess points to, and then the ranking is everybody in the queue that you see here on the list.
Thanks very much. Seeing no further questions, thanks very much for sharing what you know. And it sounds like things are well evolved in this section of the federal stimulus anyway. I think that may be a contrast to what we hear from some of the other agencies, but glad to see that we're moving forward with some logic and some clarity. Tom Beiler, OWEB. Before you start, Tom, I did get the website for the governor's sort of stimulus information. It's www.recovery.oregon.gov. I feel like it should be flashing on the bottom of the screen. So that's the place to go if you have questions or want to be involved or get on the email list. Go ahead, Tom.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Tom Beiler. I'm the executive director of the Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board. Very pleased to be here today to talk about the federal stimulus funding possibilities as they relate to OWEB. Very briefly, what OWEB does, our core mission is to direct grant funds to habitat restoration projects. We touch all four corners of the state. We work in communities all over the state. And we have, through significant state funding and other federal dollars, developed a very robust program that I believe leads the nation in habitat restoration work. We have an infrastructure, a delivery mechanism of watershed councils, locally based watershed councils, and soil and water conservation districts, as well as other local groups who take the lead in working with landowners to develop projects and implement projects on the ground. As the federal stimulus dollars, or as the Act was moving through Congress, we began to learn that there may be some opportunity for funding for the type of work that we have traditionally funded, and in December began in earnest to develop lists in order to position ourselves to potentially be a recipient of those funds. Recognizing that we have a unique opportunity here in Oregon, we have this infrastructure to be able to take advantage of those dollars and to create jobs, in particular in rural areas where our grant funds and the projects that we support through our grant dollars and through the good work of our local groups bring meaningful employment to folks in local communities around the state. And I just, while you're looking through that sheet, clearly that's not a list of projects, and I didn't bring that for you today, though we are building one and have, evolving list of projects. What that document is a preliminary analysis that was performed for us by the University of Oregon, which gives us, for the first time, a sense of what kinds of jobs are created as a result of the habitat restoration work that we fund. I wasn't planning on going into detail on that, but I thought it might be important context for you to understand the importance of this these types of projects around the state. So we've been building a list, and in fact, that analysis that you have involves a list of about $40 million worth of projects that we had developed as of January, to position ourselves for funding sources. One of the things that we're looking to do in working with the federal agencies is to bundle those projects around broad categories. Because some of these projects that we could potentially fund are in the range of $20,000 to $50,000, which looking at the big picture as part of your earlier discussion, may not make it on the radar screen. But if we bundle them around larger restoration priorities and larger restoration categories, then we can start moving what would be a small series of $20,000 to $50,000 projects into multi-million-dollar categories of projects. And we believe have the delivery mechanism through our agency and through our local groups to be able to deliver on those projects in a timely manner. We also have a number of water supply projects water conservation projects is probably a better way to put it from through our lens at OWEB, since conservation and habitat restoration are the key for us. But we do invest in and have for a number of years now invested in water piping projects, piping canals, creating greater delivery systems and for the irrigation districts and other water purveyors. That gives them better management of their resource, saves water, and from our standpoint, part of that conserved water is saved in-stream and protected in-stream for water quality and fish and wildlife purposes. So a win-win from our standpoint and from the standpoint of the folks that we work with. Getting to where we've been interacting, we have a couple of agencies that we've been working with most directly, and we're at this point competing over dollars that are likely to be competitive on a national basis. The one that maybe offers the most potential funding is NOAA Fisheries under the National Marine Fisheries Service. We have $170 million available for competitive grants. Last Friday, they published an announcement of an open competitive grant process that will applications will be due on April 6th for that particular solicitation. And we are working with our partners, both councils, districts, and Department of Fish and Wildlife in particular, to pull together some requests and perhaps might be a series of requests, again, bundling projects. And those bundles may be in the range of $10 to $15 million apiece, but we still have some time and are still in the process of working through how we would put that together. We feel that we may be very competitive, again, because of the experience and expertise that we have doing this type of work, but we'll know more probably in May in terms of how those applications will fare. Another area of interest for us is with the U.S. Forest Service. There are about $650 million available nationwide for capital improvement and maintenance. And within that category, there are opportunities for watershed improvement and watershed restoration. That hasn't been quantified. It's a bit of a black box for us. Their process is more internal than NOAA Fisheries. Mike Carrier had mentioned earlier that some of the processes, those internal processes, are moving fast. And I'll give you an example with the U.S. Forest Service, where we got a phone call on a Thursday that they needed a project list from us, from the regional office. And we had 4 hours to turn around something for them. And fortunately, the legwork we had done earlier was useful, so we were able to provide some good information for them. And also fortunate that we were able to have the relationship with the regional office to be able to have some input on that. We have about $8 million worth of projects that are pending, we think, in that internal process with the Forest Service, one of which is a water supply piping project, canal piping project on Whitechoose Creek, which would result in 7 CFS protected in stream, as well as provide some greater delivery certainty for the irrigation district, the Three Sisters Irrigation District there. We're not a big player in this, but in terms of the billions of dollars that one has potentially with the stimulus package, but we do believe that we can be an important player for communities around the state, again, because we can fund projects in areas that some of these dollars won't reach. And I think every opportunity to create some employment opportunity for folks is going to be extremely important.
Great. Thanks, Representative Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So on a new topic, except not at all, from what I was talking about before, the love your idea of bundling some projects. Am assuming, hoping that that is well coordinated with our friend Mike Carrier in the back and with the other agencies, so that everybody's talking to each other. And partly as a chance to communicate with colleagues on the committee as we address, as we began addressing earlier issues in the Umatilla Basin and the Oasis Project, et cetera, and wanting to make sure we're dealing with this very openly and as candidly and openly as we can. The I can't call it the dream, a possible little dream that at least one or two of us have, is that we are able to leverage a win-win-win flywheel, and I'll explain what I mean. That we apply some public dollars, maybe they're stimulus dollars, maybe they're bonded dollars, maybe they're dollars that are initially stimulus dollars and paid back eventually. And those pay for some water efficiency projects. And we have a couple of different agencies who would have to be involved in getting those done. And those efficiency projects help us get more water for fishies and more water for farmers. And that creates some private sector wealth. And we leverage some little portion of that private sector wealth to pay in, maybe through agricultural districts or whatever, to a system that pays for some more water projects and maybe some other upstream, downstream projects like farm to schools that gets healthier food to our kids and opens up markets for farmers, and maybe it's programs so that people on disability can get healthier food at farmers markets, opens up markets for our farmers, gets our people healthier food. Maybe there's some other great things. I don't have any particular axe to grind. And by doing that, we get some money, and that helps flip the flywheel again. We're able to use some of that public money for some more of those projects that help us flip it again. And then I think if we were willing to take this crisis opportunity to look at this, there might be a real chance for win-win-win. When I say win-win-win, I mean the two wins you mentioned, good for fishies, good for farmers, also good for the fiscal responsibility of the state, right? All three things. And to the extent, and I wanted to say that on the record, I wanted to say it to our colleagues as we've been working in little rooms trying to see what could be mustered. So if people want to talk to us, please. Representative Jensen with senior leadership, I with junior leadership at Chair Cannon's suggestion have been working on this a little bit. Your help on some of this stuff would be really great. Now, question, one, are we talking to everybody? Two, how can we, you know, fit some of the stuff you're talking about into the flywheel concept? Maybe we call them rural renewal districts, according to Representative Brian Klem, maybe not. And third, I had a third. Well, let's just start with those two.
Mr. Chair, Vice Chair Smith, are we talking to folks? Yes, we are communicating with the governor's office, and that network and communication network is forming, and we'll use that at all times as we go down this path, including talking with our sister agencies where appropriate and with our local partners. We think that's very important. We want to make sure that as we move forward with this, that folks are with us and that we're not duplicating effort. With respect to the broader vision that you mentioned, I don't know that I have anything to add to it other than that I think that OWEB could potentially be a resource and a partner depending on
sounds
how
fun,
it works
right?
together.
It's going to be fun. You're going to help. It's going to be great.
We'd be happy to have that conversation.
Yes.
Oh, Mr. Chair, you have to do something.
Any other questions, Representative Benz?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Tom, for your presentation, and I just wanted to compliment your agency on its 20 years of hard work and all the great successes that you've helped create in Oregon. And I have been involved with your agency for 20 years, and I've been able to see some of the projects, and they've been really, really good. The template that you've created here is perfect for what I think we're hoping will happen at the federal level, because you do have a track record, 20-year track record of success. My question is this. The potential job creation in Oregon, is that a column that's in your handout, is that the construction jobs, or is that a picture of long-term employment?
Mr. Chair, Representative Benz, these are associated specifically with an analysis that looked at a discrete list of projects, potential projects, and they divided those projects into four broad categories and then applied the funding associated with those habitat restoration categories to the best equivalent economic multiplier, because there aren't economic multipliers right now for the habitat restoration economy, and that's the next step for us, is to refine that analysis more. So it is directly targeted to a specific list of projects put into the best fitting economic multiplier. That's where we get those job numbers, and that's where we get the additional economic activity multiplier associated with that. So it's all based on a finite set of projects, and the total jobs number is for both full and part-time work.
Very quick follow-up. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess it looks as if some of these are more habitat-oriented and others are more irrigation-oriented. The irrigation, they're both important, and your charge, I'm sure, is for both. In this challenging economic time, would it be possible for your agency to emphasize those that create or have the possibility of creating longer-term job opportunities? And by that I mean, is there some way that you can, within the scope of your mission, appropriately allocate these monies to projects that maybe are more irrigation-oriented or ones that would prompt more economic activity than possibly the riparian restoration activities?
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Benz, that's an excellent question, and it's one of the things that our board looks at with its investments is not just the ecological benefit of those investments, but also the economic and community benefits. And so that it would be appropriate for our board to take into account those longer term those investments that would provide longer term prosperity. And I think we have a strong track record of making those types of investments. We've funded, for example, numerous piping projects, water supply projects that have those multiple benefits, those win-win benefits that we were speaking of earlier.
Thank you.
Thanks very much, Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do you have other questions for this testifier? I want to get in front of anybody else.
Please.
Actually, I'd want to just say something in between a panel, so I'll just withdraw.
Representative Jensen.
Well, I just I think the point has been brought up here. I think one of the real assets, and this is not a question to Tom, but an observation that I have, and I think that Representative Benz has kind of alluded to too. When we look at our competitiveness for these grants, for these federal dollars, and the somewhat yet little vague to me parameters that surround those, the wisdom of the state of Oregon some number of years ago to establish OWEB and this program, to establish another agency and understand that it's not easy to come into this building and start talking about creating another agency. That was precisely what we did back at that time. And, you know, they have a very proven track record. They've got a cadre of people around the state, all of whom know each other and all of whom they know, and, you know, to supply us with the leadership that we need to legitimate, I believe, the types of projects that we might be interested in and we might be able to come up with. Some of the things, perhaps, Representative Benz, can you expand? I don't know that they can do that short of either legislation or constitutional amendments, but I don't know that they can't either, but their mission already is very broad, and I see this particular agency as being fundamental and crucial, and that's no reflection on any other agency. It is merely one that has devoted itself from its very inception to addressing the problem that we are experiencing in contemporary American life. So, as Tom will admit, I've been kind of a pain a time or two as we've gone along, but the groundwork is there. I think we've got something as a state to work with that many other states don't have. I guess it's the bottom line of what I was trying to say with that.
Thank you, Representative Jensen, and I agree wholeheartedly. It's really a testament to the wisdom, I think, of the people who helped develop this model for restoration. And it speaks volumes to the kind of work that you're out there doing. When we have, for those members on this committee who do not serve on the Natural Resources Subcommittee, when we did OEB's budget and heard this sort of outpouring of support from Soil and Water Conservation District people, from Watershed Council people, from the contractors who are working statewide on these projects, it's clear the kind of impact that you have on communities and the kind of support that you get from communities. That's only to say that you should be a big part of the conversations we have about how to, perhaps let's do something like the concept that Representative Smith was doing, how we leverage additional federal dollars, how we get additional economic development in our community through water projects, and I'm glad to know that you'll be at those tables. So thanks very much. We'll move on. Comment from Representative Gilliam, and in the meantime, let's get Phil Ward or Brenda Bateman from Water Resources Department. Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am wondering if Tom agrees with Representative Jensen that he has been a pain.
Sorry, Representative Gilliam?
Mr. Chair, Vice Chair Gilliam, I thank you for the opportunity to clarify on the record that the answer is no,
okay.
Never.
Well, it's fine. Just glad to clear that up. Now, what I wanted to say was this, and it isn't about you, Tom. It's that I wish Mr. Carrier was still in the room, because I came across this memo, and it's almost a month old, and my concern is that we also take up a focus on what part of these stimulus dollars can be directly applied to the timber industry. Just as maybe we're prepared because of the work in the water area, I think we are unprepared, and this really concerns me. And I'd like to have somebody like Carrier or others in the governor's office tell us what we need to do. We're going to need some training. We're going to need, we've allowed our timber industry to atrophy to the point that I would hate for us to miss job opportunities to thin the forest, to get chips, to do the things we need to do under best practices of forest management. And I don't know if we're shovel ready. And there's a whole lot of money coming from every direction, including the Forest Service. So I'd love to focus on that when we get a chance.
Thank you, Representative McGinn. We're going to go ahead and, I'm sorry, Brenda, we're going to put you on hold in order to get our gentleman from the Bureau of Reclamation. So this is Tim Personius, I think I've got that right. We're going to get on the phone. So, Brenna, if you're willing to wait for a moment, that would be great. Hi, is this Tim Personius?
Yes, this is Tim.
Hi, Tim. This is Representative Ben Cannon in Salem, Oregon. Thank you for joining us. You're with the House Environment and Water Committee, and we have probably just 5 to 10 minutes to get an update from you on the Bureau of Rec and your plans for TARP-related funding and how we in Oregon might interface with you and benefit from the kinds of projects that you may be undertaking with these dollars. So if you could spend a few minutes giving us the kind of broad outlines of what you were designated under TARP and what Oregon may see of that, and leave a few minutes for questions, that would be great.
Okay, thank you, and feel free to interrupt and ask anything for clarification. For starters, I don't believe we have any funding under TARP, but our funding comes under ARRA, if that's the new acronym.
I'm sorry.
That's Recovery Act.
And that's what I meant.
Yeah. Reclamation has $1 billion appropriation under ARRA for projects. There to be focused on Bureau of Reclamation mission-type opportunities, maximum stimulus effect and job creation as soon as possible. They have to be expended using our normal budget processes and our normal authorities for doing work. So, for instance, just to be clear, we're not looking to fund schools or roads or anything. We're focused on our projects and the programs that we have. Oregon, that probably means mostly an emphasis on water conservation type activities through our... We have a couple of different programs, a water conservation field service program and a what used to be called Water 2025 Challenge Grant Program. The stimulus funds will mainly be available through the Challenge Grant Program in larger amounts than have been available before. And the process will be to, posting will go out on grants.gov, and entities that are interested in applying, the criteria will be listed, and they will have an opportunity to apply, and then there will be a competitive evaluation and selection process, and grants get awarded. I cannot tell you what projects are on the list or most importantly, which ones will get funded. Reclamation overall has about $2.7 billion in projects or proposals on, you know, a very large list for our $1 billion appropriation. So obviously, lots of things aren't going to get funded. And no decisions have been made on any funding at this point. Reclamation did have several, I'll call them set-asides, listed in the Stimulus Act. So specific four funding amounts were identified for rural water and Title VI projects, as well as some California Bay Delta and Central Utah Project Completion Act. And there was an additional amount of $10 million identified for canal inspections. Other than that, it's kind of wide open in terms of the exact amounts that would end up in those categories and then the leftover amounts that get applied to the rest of our potential projects, like water conservation projects. So that's kind of the general sense of things. Timing-wise, the acting commissioner meets with the secretary every week and is refining information all the time, and the department is very involved in the selection and vetting of projects, and we expect that hopefully in the next few weeks we'll have some real specifics on which projects are going forward and what the funding amounts will be. Folks are working on it as fast as they can, but there are hundreds of projects to sort through, so it is taking some time.
Thank you very much. Let's see if there are any questions from members of the committee. Could you give us even an example, Mr. Personius, of the type of project that, especially for members who may not be familiar with the Bureau of Rec's work, what types of projects might this money fund?
Let's see. There are proposals that we've received from Oregon, mostly in the water conservation category. Central Oregon Irrigation District is proposing to put a large number of their canals into enclosed pipes and pressurize their system. So that's a construction project. It has the benefit of reducing, because there's less water would be lost in the canal system, they could divert less water, so it leaves more water in stream, and it pressurizes their system so that folks down the line actually have pressurized pipes they can use to irrigate fields as opposed to having to run pumps, so there'd actually be an energy conservation benefit as well. There's a number of similar projects like that in Oregon. The Deschutes Resource Conservancy has a proposal in, and they mainly work with a number of partners on similar kinds of water conservation projects focusing in the Deschutes Basin. I'm not aware of any large construction infrastructure type projects in
Oregon. We have a couple proposals in Washington, Idaho. They're basically aging infrastructure, so replacing large spillways or building a new siphon to increase water capacity. Simply haven't had the need for that kind of a project in Oregon, so the emphasis there has been more on water conservation type programs. And really the emphasis we're trying to put on the HARA funds, you know, we have a normal funding process for smaller projects, lots of irrigation districts and cities, municipalities, do smaller water conservation projects. A lot of them are these piping type of projects where they reduce their water loss by taking open canals and putting them into pipe. And they'll continue to have an opportunity for the normal funding stream. We're really trying to focus the larger projects that normally just don't have a chance of getting funded.
Well, great. That's very helpful to hear. Representative Benz, did you have a question?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I did. Is the window still open for further applications, or, and if so, how much longer? Or, and then I think you may have mentioned within which period of time the project has to be constructed by. I'm afraid I didn't catch it.
So the first question, yes, the window is still open, certainly for water conservation type projects. The process will be called for in the Stimulus Act. All grant opportunities have to be posted publicly on grants.gov, and that hasn't, I think there's a notice going out this week generally, and then a more specific notice will be going out in the next couple of weeks. And we'll make additional contact with all of our customers and folks like the Oregon Water Resource Congress so that the word gets out to people. The second question was...
Deadline.
Generally there's a 30-day window after the notice goes out for people to get in. And that's usually enough time to prepare an application, although, again, we have gotten word out to people, so for the most part, folks have either already applied or they understand that they have this window coming up.
I think the question was related to deadlines for project development or completion.
Oh, yeah. Well, the focus really is on to have the funding expended by September 2010, so substantial completion of construction and most of your funding spent by September 2010. It remains to be seen, I think, how realistic that's going to be in terms of whether Bureau of Reclamation, just as one instance, can get that kind of money spent in that time frame. So consider that, you know, we're essentially doubling our budget and expecting to get it spent in the next 16, 18 months. That's a big challenge. There typically just aren't that many projects sitting around shovel-ready that can get to construction and get it completed that quickly. Nevertheless, that is the priority. I think it just remains to be seen whether we have $1 billion worth of that kind of project in the pipeline or whether we're going to have to relax the criteria.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Posonius. And as we get... Oh, Representative Jensen has a...
I just have a quick question, a matter of curiosity. Can aquifer recharge be perceived as conservation?
I guess it would depend on the specifics of the proposal. But
it conserves water.
If it can pass that criteria, I don't see why it could.
Let's get it done then.
I talked to Phil Ward earlier today about a project in Unitillo, and that's certainly a possibility.
That may happen to be the one to which
no.
Representative Jensen is alluded.
It's nearby.
Comment, Representative Jensen.
That would be a reasonable possibility, but the reason that it would probably be one I might be thinking about would be a great model for the rest of the world to look at after it's completed and its success is well known.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Personius, and it may be interesting if we get a chance to revisit this subject before we adjourn our session. It might be interesting to get an update from you after you've made some of these grants and find out just where we're at. But thank you for your time today.
You bet. I would be happy to speak to the committee again.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Brenda.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Brenda Bateman with the Water Resources Department, and we've identified a few key areas in which the department can help Oregon prepare for federal stimulus funds. I wanted to share a couple of them with you today. First and foremost, we see our role as technical and permitting support for a lot of the projects that are going to be moving through. We expect to see a great increase in a request for limited licenses for water as part of these projects, and that's not just the water-related projects, but this is the road and bridge construction, building construction, and other projects that will be underway. The reason for this is when there's a project in place, there's often a need for temporary use of water for dust abatement, for a number of other things, materials mixing, cement mixing, supply of the temporary facilities that are there on site. And so we expect that a lot of those requests will actually be coming through our department as part of all of the other discussions that we've been having. And so we are training staff members, or we can train staff members as we need, and we have staff already trained up, of course, to handle these applications and requests for limited licenses. One of our concerns, of course, is that any significant reductions in our staff capabilities may create a bottleneck, so I wanted to put that out there. The department is and will be providing technical support for many of the projects that stakeholders in this room represent this afternoon, so the irrigation districts, the cities, and other water users. And I did want to highlight just briefly the Umatilla Basin Recovery Project, which is now underway. That project is nearing completion of its feasibility study stage and will soon be moving into implementation. And so that's a good example of the type of project that will be near the front of the queue in terms of being shovel-ready. The reason that I wanted to highlight that was it brings me to my second point in terms of the department's role, and that is helping prepare projects to become shovel-ready. In the year 2008, we launched two grant programs that I think will be very important to moving projects along. The first grant program was specifically focused on helping communities with their water resource planning. And the second program, moving a bit further down the project development timeline, was to help out with feasibility studies. Projects have to move through these stages in order to become shovel-ready. And we found, particularly working with the stakeholders who are here in the room, that those two project stages are often the most difficult to fund. You can't bond for a planning or for a feasibility study. And that's often what creates a bottleneck to moving a project along. So I just wanted to note that we don't really know how long this process is going to be and how many projects will end up needing to move through these stages in order to become shovel-ready. So the department has two grant programs and two structures there available to help folks move down the line. And the third piece that I wanted to mention just briefly this afternoon is the department's own infrastructure projects that we would very much like to see supported. And two in particular are our stream gauge network and our groundwater monitoring well network. One monitors surface water, of course, the other groundwater, and provide crucial historic data for the department, not only to identify trends, but also in our day-to-day management of Oregon's water resources. Both of those networks, as you may imagine, are in constant need of maintenance and upgrade, modernization, and are actually part of the lists that we've moved forward to the governor's office. Oh, the governor's office did ask me to clarify for the committee the URL that was announced earlier. There are no W's in front of recovery.oregon.gov. Oh. And with that, I'll be happy to take questions.
Thank you. Questions for the statement? President Berger.
Thank you. She just answered the one that I had, and I'd like her to answer it again so I can write it down.
The URL.
Oh, recovery.oregon.gov.
Yeah.
Thank you.
No W's.
Anything else? I have a comment, Brendan, and maybe you can respond to it, but it from what you've said, it sounds to me like the department will be playing an important role providing assistance to folks who are seeking grants, seeking federal dollars. but not the role of orchestrating the state's response to this opportunity and response to the challenges that we face when it comes to adequate and safe supplies of water. And I think it's symptomatic, generally, of the sort of challenges and pressures that your department is under, being a largely general fund-oriented department, given the kind of budget environment we're in. It would be nice to think, I think in a sort of alternate world, that Water Resources Department would be helping orchestrate this response, at least when it comes to questions of supply and adequate supply. And that's not the sense, I don't mean to be critical, but it's not the sense that I get from your presentation.
Mr. Chair, I think that characterization is correct. We have not traditionally had infrastructure programs of our own that we're helping to support or construct, don't have standing revolving funds in the same way that other agencies do specifically for the construction of such projects. But we are, as I say, of course, very involved in the technical support of making sure communities are thinking through the process and building it the way they need to.
Yeah, and obviously that's critical work. Thank you, Brenda.
Thank you,
appreciate
Mr.
it. And let's move now to Gail Shibley and Lynn Schossler to talk about the drinking water, public health, and OECDD angle here. And we're going to have to move quite quickly.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Gail Shibley, Administrator of the Office of Environmental Public Health and Public Health Division in Oregon's Department of Human Services. And without being glib, Mr. Chair and members, we are likewise moving very, very quickly in dealing with these dollars. As Mr. Carrier mentioned earlier, $2 billion nationwide for the state drinking water revolving funds. That was the federal government's decision to utilize an existing structure, which is the state revolving fund, for this rather distinctive, not business as usual, but using that kind of structure. Oregon shares about 28.5 million in drinking water allotment, if you will. We did a very aggressive outreach to large and small drinking water systems around the state and got about 150 letters of interest that were submitted, totaling $336 million worth of request. So just an enormous amount of request for even the very impressive 28.5 million that we are anticipating getting. As other commenters have noted, a certain percentage of these funds are to be used in specific ways. At least 50% of the funds are to be a grant or a subsidy loan, as we call it, and at least $1.05 are to be for green projects, energy efficiency, water conservation, other kinds of green infrastructure. What we did within public health and with our colleagues at OECDD, as I affectionately say, my bankers, we looked at our usual project rating schedules that really look at five different categories. First and foremost and overwhelmingly is risk to public health. This, after all, drinking water is probably the most important public health effort that the state of Oregon is engaged in, or at least along with safe food. So risk to human health is number one. Compliance with the Federal Safe Drinking Water Act is number two. Community affordability issues is a third category. Cost effectiveness is a fourth. And then consolidation of two or more smaller systems or two or more systems is a fifth category as we looked at these projects. So with that, we what we also layered on was ready to proceed. You've heard the phrase shovel ready, where we really say, look, are you really, really ready to move? As others have pointed out, we have until February 2010. The administrator under the federal law has a duty to reobligate and then reallocate any dollars that are not allocated. So we are absolutely committed to moving these dollars just as quickly as possible. And of course, the Made in USA, Davis Bacon, et cetera, are also apply to these dollars. So we are literally about to do just that. This is our draft intended use plan. We have just recently in the last week gotten final guidance from the US EPA in terms of exactly what that intended use plan ought to be like. And I'll turn this over to the Deputy Director of OECD, Lynn Chesler, as I provide to the committee the list that literally went up on our website this afternoon that lists all of these projects, 336 million of them.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Lynn Chesler. I'm the Deputy Director of Economic and Community Development. Ms. Shibley's accurately described the process we went through, and I'd really like to, for the record, commend the League of Oregon Cities and the Association of Oregon Counties. They got on the stick right away last fall and contacted their membership with the perspective of stimulus money being on the horizon, asked those members to submit projects. What we did as the League and the Association of Oregon Counties assembled their list, we started gleaning through it to find those projects that we thought would probably meet the criteria for the safe drinking water. So having that list, we sent out letters to those communities that looked like they were viable and requested that they submit a letter of interest in order to get on the DHS list of eligible projects. That deadline was February 2nd, and very quickly DHS went through and ranked the projects by the criteria that was described to you. On that list, I think you'll see that probably the highest rated project is about 85 points. If you look at the list between 85 and down to 60, there's probably 20 projects are in that range. If you look at the amount of money that's available, it's $28.5 million. We have a limit on our program of $6 million per community, so you can quickly see that 5 to 10 projects could gobble up the entire allocation, and we have 20 projects within the top rated communities, so you're going to see a lot of disappointed people in that other 200 plus projects and 100 some communities that don't get funded. But unfortunately, we don't have, you know, additional resources. Just yesterday, we mailed out letters to all the communities that are on that list and reminded them of the deadline and provided them application materials. April 15th is our deadline to receive their applications. We will have those reviewed by May 1st, and we will have awards announced by May 15th. That doesn't mean that all the documentation has to be done, but they have to have a very high prospect of being able to get that completed by this fall, so we can indeed, as was mentioned, get all these communities under contract by February 10th of next year. We have injected into our criteria and our funding awards two distinctions in addition to what was described, that being those communities that are disadvantaged, disadvantage being defined as having exceptionally high water rates already, or a community that's particularly poverty-stricken. And what we will do is provide those communities no less than 50% of their award in grant. Those non-disadvantaged communities will get up to a 50% grant award. In addition, part of the federal criteria, but also state criteria that we want to make sure gets realized, somewhat consistent with what Michael Carrier was talking about, is we want to make sure that green is a part of the infrastructure. That could be efficient pumps, that could be wind or solar power supplements. For those large systems that come to us, we will provide an additional grant up to the, in addition to the normal grant, of up to $500,000 for those types of equipment specifications. We know that green sometimes costs more, but in the long term, it's far more advantageous and lasts longer. We're also going to implement an asset management program to make sure these communities have the best equipment that is studied and monitored, and their rate system assures the long-term longevity of maintenance of that system. Some communities, as might be a surprise to you, but still don't have water meters. We will provide grants to large systems of up to $100,000 to provide water meters in their communities or additional water meters. Some communities don't have a very secure water supply. We're interested in enhancing that. We'll provide a grant up to $100,000 for that. And source water protection, sometimes communities don't have a good security around their source water. So, again, another grant of up to $100,000. So you can see that for the maximum award that we normally provide, even if it is a non-disadvantaged community, they'll get up to $3 million of a grant plus another six, seven, could be up to another $900,000 of grant. So $6 million award, $3.9 million of that could be for a grant even to the non-disadvantaged communities.
Great. Thanks for their questions. Representative Smith.
Two questions. One, I think you answered partially, so I'll change my question slightly. How many of these projects, or what share, rough sense, of projects could be defined as sort of water security projects? And I don't sort of wear a tinfoil cap and worry about, you know, poison of our water supply all the time, but have gotten constituent questions about if we're doing water projects, what are we doing about water security? And so I'd have that question. And the second, which of these might help get people in the private sector rich?
Mr. Chair, Representative
If any,
Smith,
maybe it's none.
To your first question, I have not gone through the list. You know, frankly, I just got it today as in this present form to screen through which are security measures. Generally, security measures are in addition to some other more significant concern of the community. So as we work with these communities, if a security concern comes to our attention, we will add grant funding to their allocation. To the second question, it's going to have to go through a public bid process. It's just how we have to do things in Oregon. So hopefully the stories we're hearing about competitive bids for construction contracts at present, yesterday we heard that for a typical water system improvement project, two bids was the norm of 2 or 3 years ago. A recent water project that went out to bid came in with 38 bids, all of which were underneath the engineer's estimate of cost.
It's quite a transformation of the market.
It's a hungry time.
Yes. Well, I appreciate this information. I mean, just for a little bit of context, I mean, $28 million is a lot, but we look at the water system that Representative Bailey, Representative Smith, and I drink from at home, and they're undergoing over the next 5 or 6 years at least $400 million in upgrades, likely upgrades in their efforts to comply with EPA rules to protect the safety of the water. So it's just a drop in the bucket when it comes to large municipal systems, but certainly an appreciated one. So thank you. We're going to spend the last few minutes of this committee hearing from Anita Winkler, Dan Eisenbeis, and Katie Fast. So if the three of you could come to the... So we've heard a lot about your good work in helping assemble some of these project lists, and...
Who do you want first?
Forward to hearing from you in any order.
I'll start. Chairman Cannon, members of the committee, I'm Anita Winkler, and I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon Water Resources Congress. You've already heard our name taken in vain by the Bureau of Reclamation and several of our district projects mentioned by the other departments. Sue's handing out to you some written testimony. The good news for you is I am not reading that testimony. I'll do something much shorter. And it will be followed by a packet that is what we've been putting together and what Tim Personius referred to as our project list. So I was asked to give you a little background about what we've been doing to set ourselves up, set our members up for infrastructure funding under the economic stimulus. We started over 2 years ago when one of our priorities was infrastructure funding, and the question then is, what's infrastructure? And that seems like sort of a mundane question, but it elicited an enormous conversation because at the time the feds were talking about aging infrastructure, And while we have some aging irrigation infrastructure in this state, we also have a crying need for some new infrastructure or some improvements to existing infrastructure. So our list was very long, and there's also a white paper attached, and that'll explain a little bit more about where we got to with our infrastructure definition. Suffice it to say, it's a very broad definition when you're running an irrigation system. But as I put together the written testimony today, it really broke out. That's a timeline of activity we've been involved in, but it really broke out into three pieces of how we've worked. One is being informed about the need of our members, and that was our job to get that information. The second step was we needed to be informed about the opportunity. What was going on in Congress? What was moving forward? What did that package look like? And what did we need to do to be part of the process? And the third was sharing the information we'd gathered about our members' needs with others. So kind of quickly tell you what we did with that. Starting a couple years ago, we started compiling lists of projects, what our members needed, costs, all that good information. And the whys and wherefores, and that led to the white paper that you have. We've shared that with our congressional delegation, with federal agencies, and with NGOs with which we've worked over the years. We then started, more recently, on the infamous shovel-ready project list. We started that last December at our annual conference when our representative from D.C., we have a lobbyist in D.C. that works with us, and he challenged us and said, here's what you got to do. You need to have a list of projects, and we need to know how much they are. We need to know how they're going to fit within certain criteria that's being talked about in D.C., and you need to have it tomorrow. So we started, and by the time you convened in January, we had our list and had been distributing it. So I was not the most popular person with our districts because we kept bugging them a lot to get all the information we needed. That list is basically water projects that are water conservation through piping of canals, and Tim Personi has talked a little bit about that. Small hydropower generation by using existing diverted water for irrigation and running it through a small hydro system, and fish protection. Conserved water puts water back in stream for fish. We do a lot of work in building fish screens at irrigation points. Irrigation diversion points. You have the updated list, and I will tell you that list was updated today. We got the whole package ready to bring over to you, and a district called and said, we've got a change and need to make an addition. So we tore the package apart and updated it. So it's an ongoing iterative process, obviously, and we frankly hope that pretty soon we're going to knock projects off that list because they've gotten funding and be adding other projects as they move into a shovel-ready state. We define shovel-ready, by the way, in this instance for a federal project, as having NEPA done as fully as it can be done. You can't complete your NEPA review until you know the source of funding, because every funding source has a different review requirement. So generally, we can't do a broad enough NEPA to cover all of it. In some instances, we can. But those projects can finish the NEPA within a couple months once they know the funding source. So they're very ready to go in and have met all the federal agency requirements with the agencies we've talked to. That list is about $126 million around the state. It's about 50-50 labor and materials. And it needs less than 50% funding in order to move those projects. In many instances, they really need a very small amount of federal assistance to get the project off the ground. The second part was being informed about the opportunity. We have spent untold hours with our folks in D.C., working with the Bureau of Reclamation, with everybody we could talk to find out what the process would be, what the requirements were going to be, and try and sort out everything you've heard today. And we know almost as much as you know after having the short presentations today. And the short part is, for a large part, the agencies are now embargoed on sharing additional information because they have to go through the Office of Management and Budget to get everything cleared. So, in fact, Tim Personius had told me some of the information he had today he didn't have yesterday. So it's changing that quickly. But we started tracking this when the legislation was first introduced in Congress. As it went through the different iterations there, the explanatory pieces that came for different agencies about how they'd be moving forward. There's been a stack of desks just building on my desk of all this information, and I will admit to having part of it. I will not admit to having read most of it. It's just way too much, and I can't understand about half of it. And then we started meeting with local agency staff. We were told early on that the access to the money is going to be through the regional offices or the local offices, and basically don't call D.C., which probably was good because we couldn't find out who to talk to in D.C. anyhow. So we started then sharing the information. We advocate on an annual basis on agency budgets for our members' needs, so we already knew people in the agencies and they knew us, so it wasn't a new face. We've been a participant in Congressman Blumenauer's infrastructure meetings, talking about a national infrastructure process, both in D.C. and in the meetings he held around the state. We have been in contact both as an organization and by our members with our local congressional offices, probably more often than they want to hear from us, to remind them about our projects and talk about the need. When we met with the federal agencies, we were met with a sort of a, wow, somebody has a list, and somebody called us. They were quite surprised because they apparently didn't know we were supposed to call them first before we called D.C.
Anita, unless you can get one of your colleagues to yield their time, you're going to need to
let me make a quick reference that there's some lessons that we learned that I do want to share, and that is identify the source of funding. And it goes back to the NEPA. The shovel-ready, and I think the biggest issue is shovel-ready is very difficult. You've heard from several people. We are exhausting the local match that our members have to be shovel-ready this year for this round. They do not have money for feasibility studies and the piece that will get them to shovel-ready in the future. So I think there'll be another round of funding. I don't know when. I'm really worried that we won't have projects ready to go. The other kind of lessons learned are outlined in the written testimony, and I'd be glad to answer any questions or talk to you all later.
Great, thanks. Let's hear from Katie here.
Okay.
Go ahead.
For the record, Katie Fass with the Oregon Farm Bureau Federation. I'd first like to start out just saying thank you to the work that the Oregon Water Resources Congress has done. It's the private sector kind of stepping up and moving projects forward that are going to bring the dollars to Oregon, and it's them being ready and understanding the process that is going to help Oregon benefit. My members are either individual irrigators or they fall under districts, so I would say a majority of the individual farmers that are going to benefit from the stimulus package are going to fall under the district's applications. And maybe what I'd like to push today is this committee and the legislature's focus on not just letting the stimulus package be the only focus around water and water supply development that we have, but having that discussion move forward in other discussions this session and into the future. Ag irrigation and water supply projects bring in dollars on the benefit of construction, but then also the added revenue that the state will bring in on tax generation into the future, because agriculture's lifeblood is in water, and we can grow a higher value crop through irrigation than we can through dry land operations. Last February, the legislature did step up and assist with feasibility studies, which is our biggest challenge on bringing shovel-ready projects forward through the passage of 1069. Unfortunately, those dollars have not gotten on the ground yet, and there's about 20-plus projects that are kind of in that feasibility stage right now, and probably in another set of projects that are gearing up to the feasibility stage. So there's another stage besides what Anita and other folks have submitted in shovel-ready projects. There's another stage of projects moving forward. And the continued focus, I guess I'd just like to push and close because I know you're short on time, but the stimulus package isn't the last thing that we need to do. The Umatilla isn't the only area in the state that's suffering. And having this body focus around water and doing some specific work around moving projects forward and figuring out how we can leverage state dollars and partner that with federal dollars in this package in the future is just something that's important to the Oregon agriculture community, and I think you'll hear it's important to the municipality community as well.
Thanks, Katie.
Chair Cannon, members of the committee, for the record, Daniel Eisenbeis, the League of Oregon Cities. I will attempt to keep my remarks extremely brief and not even attempt to summarize the written testimony you have before you. I do just want to point out a couple highlights, though. This testimony alludes to a couple resources that we've compiled that I've provided to Ms. Petrino that she can email out to all of you. They are lengthy enough that I did not want to print out copies. We did a survey of our members in December and January in anticipation of possible stimulus dollars at the federal level and possibly the state level for municipal infrastructure projects that would be ready to put out to bid within 120 days. The short point is that cities all around the state responded, and the infrastructure needs and the backlog of projects around this state far exceeds the amount of money that has come through ARRA, far exceeds the capacity of those communities to fund them with local dollars. And it's really imperative that the state step up and help contribute toward funding those projects. There are benefits both for local communities and for the state's tax base, also carrying out implementation of public health and environmental objectives set by the state as well as the federal government. More recently, we have compiled a guidebook for cities to stimulus funding opportunities. We're updating that continuously. That's posted on our website, which is orcities.org, along with other resources. Right now, we're in the mode of trying to make sure that state agencies and federal agencies are communicating with cities to make sure that these dollars get programmed and put to use as quick as possible and to the full extent possible. I know there's been a lot of comments about frustration, lack of knowledge today. I want to commend you for holding this hearing because there is information that I've certainly learned today, and I've been tasked with finding out a lot of this information on behalf of cities. And we certainly look forward to the governor's office moving toward more of a central coordination role to get information out to local governments. As Ms. Fast pointed out, there is a need beyond the stimulus dollars that are currently on the table. And in terms of the ways that the legislature can act, I think it's important that the legislature protect funding for the functions at state agencies that review projects, permit projects, and provide technical support. It's also important that the state recognize that federal dollars come with certain hurdles that may not be appropriate for all projects, and that using lottery bonds, for instance, to fund some of the state revolving funds like the Special Public Works Fund and the Water Wastewater Fund can help move projects forward without requiring NEPA review, for instance, that still have great benefits for our economy and the environment as well as public health. With that, I'll conclude my comments and open things to questions.
Thanks very much. We might have time for just one quick question, or maybe not. We'll follow up with you later. Representative Smith, quickly.
We can get the answer later. Just to you folks and you folks, So my sense of how we can get some of the irrigation projects to the front of the line is we can demonstrate their win-win-win nature. You know, good for, yes, farmers, but also for fisheries and fiscal responsibility. If we don't do that, they're not going to move to the front of the line. We're not going to get them done. I want to talk to you about that more later. As to your projects, I do differentiate between economic development, water projects, and, you know, cleaner, safer drinking water projects. Not better or worse, but different. To the extent any of the projects the League of Oregon Cities is working on are good not only for priceless things, which we care about, but also priceful things, it would be valuable to hear. I did that as fast as I could. I'll shut up now.
Thank you.
May I quickly comment? Chair Cannon, Vice Chair Smith, I would remind the committee that...
Oh, you speak Jefferson language.
Municipal water supplies are important not only for the water that we drink, but also for the industrial processes that occur in cities.
And so economic multiplier information
are the basis
is really valuable
of our economy.
To provide.
Yes.
Great. Thanks very much. With that, we will conclude the adjourn the House Environment Water Committee. Thank you very much.